Is your child a creative, out-of-the-box thinker who struggles in school and thinks best when staring out the window? If so, he or she may have something in common with Keira Knightley, Pablo Picasso, Tommy Hilfiger, and 35% of entrepreneurs in the U.S. Dyslexia. This is LD Expert Live. Today, we're talking about the strengths associated with the dyslexic thinking style, how to support your dyslexic learner, and what it takes to overcome the challenges. I have a special treat for you today. Just a little later in the broadcast, you're going to get to hear from 10-year-old Sissy Varela, who, in spite of her challenges with dyslexia, has already published what our kids call a chapter book. Welcome to LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning differences, dyslexia, and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers, and author of At Wit's End, A Parent's Guide to Ending the Struggle, Tears, and Turmoil of Learning Disabilities. 35 years ago, I opened Stowell Learning Centers to help dyslexic learners resolve their challenges with reading, writing, and spelling. This book helps you understand why some bright students struggle with dyslexia or other learning disabilities and what it takes to change that permanently. To get a free copy, go to parentsatwitsend.com. I am constantly blown away by the talents of our dyslexic learners. I remember an 8-year-old who came to us as a complete non-reader, and yet, she was already an award-winning artist. Traditionally, formal education has not been set up to reward the strengths of the dyslexic thinker. So these talented kids often go through school with low self-esteem and low confidence. One of the things that makes them particularly vulnerable to being misunderstood by teachers and parents is that they tend to be bright, often very verbal, and talented and creative, which just doesn't jive with their struggles with reading and writing. Here are four strengths of many dyslexic learners. One, strong, strategic, creative, big picture thinking. Did you know that 1 in 3 entrepreneurs in the U.S. are dyslexic? Dyslexic individuals are known for having these sudden leaps of insight and outside-the-box solutions to problems. I remember Paul Orfalea, the founder of Kinko's, talking about sitting around in college with a group of his friends who were frustrated that there was nowhere to make copies because it was the middle of the night. Well, instead of focusing on the complaints and the excuses that they would have to make to their professors the next day, Paul's brain jumped to a solution. Why not build a copy center that was open round the clock? Which he did, and he started right there on that college campus. Number 2, highly observant. Dyslexic learners often have rapid visual processing and a gift for imaging that allows them to be unusually observant to spotting differences, things that don't fit, and noticing things that others miss. The Dyslexic Advantage Organization reports that there appears to be an overrepresentation of dyslexic individuals among firefighters, where that rapid and dynamic spatial problem solving and situational awareness are, of course, valuable assets. Number 3, three-dimensional thinking. Those with dyslexia often have this strong visual spatial thinking style that allows them to picture things three-dimensionally in their mind so they can see all different angles and perspectives. Many of the world's top architects and fashion designers are dyslexic. Dyslexic sports stars have commented that this ability helps them to mentally see the field or the arena from a bird's eye view and predict where the ball or puck or players will go. And number four, a high degree of empathy. Dyslexic thinkers tend to be intuitive and have the ability to read a situation with a sense of what's happening for other people. A couple of months ago, I heard about a young girl diagnosed with dyslexia who put these talents to work. Sissy Varela embraced her dyslexia as a superpower and in 2020 put her gifted storytelling and creative ideas into writing and self-publishing a delightful book called Doggy Days, Jack and Princess. She launched a website which she used to start her own business and create a scholarship fund to help other children with dyslexia. Welcome, Sissy. I'm so excited to have you on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I am so impressed. You're an author already at 10 years old. It's amazing. What grade are you in now, Sissy?
I am in fourth grade at St. Anne's School.
And when did you write your book? Were you in third grade or fourth grade?
I was in third grade.
You're in third grade. So I understand that you have dyslexia. When did you first find out that you had dyslexia?
I found out last year in December.
And how did you feel about that?
At first, I was bummed because I didn't really know what dyslexia was, and I didn't like know anything about it. Then I was like farther into therapy, I was happy because, when I found out, it explained how, because why reading was so hard for me,
mm-hmm.
and I felt relieved that I didn't have to hide anymore, that I wasn't good at reading.
Yeah, I've heard that before from students, that they just feel relieved that now I know what this is all about. And I hear that you call dyslexia your superpower. Tell me about that.
Well, when I was like sad, my mom was like, don't be sad, it's your little superpower. And then she told me about all the famous people that have dyslexia, like Albert Einstein, half of the investors on Shark Tank, which is my favorite show. And that cheered me up a little. And she also told me that they're really creative and good at sports. Like they are really good at reading the court at basketball, and they can intercept any pass and read the field at soccer.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And a lot of people who have done really creative things, you know, actors and artists and authors and singers and of course, sports stars and inventors, all kinds of people have that dyslexic thinking style. So you put your creative thinking to work and you wrote a chapter book called Doggy Days, Jack and Princess. It's really good. I really enjoyed it. How did you come up with the idea for this story?
I came up with the idea for Doggy Days because I love animals. I have a dog. I have a cat and I have a guinea pig, and I've always wanted a husky, but there's so much work and they're crazy. So I thought I could just like picture it in my mind and like think that I have one by writing a book about them.
How fun. That's really cool. And have you always liked writing stories?
Yes. Like whenever my teacher gives me an assignment for writing stories, I will always go like above and beyond and do more than what she says.
Mm-hmm. So what was the most fun thing about writing Doggy Days?
The most fun thing was at the end, finding what the cover looked like and having like picking the pictures and like what Jack looked like and what Princess looked like. That was my favorite thing.
Very cool. And did the pictures turn out like the pictures in your head?
Yes.
Nice. So what was the hardest thing about writing the book? I mean, this is a pretty long book.
the hardest thing was like finding the end and having it all come together, and also like not correcting the spelling errors even though there's a red line under it.
Oh, because you put some creative spelling in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a really fun book, and I know other kids are going to really enjoy this, and I think they're going to be really inspired by you. A lot of times people think that someone who has dyslexia, you know, is not going to be able to write, and I know, like you, you know, a lot of our dyslexic students have great ideas and lots of fun stories in their heads, so I think this is super inspiring. It sounds like your teacher was really encouraging to you. What do you wish every teacher knew about dyslexia?
I wish every teacher knew that if you're dyslexic, they work 10 times as harder at home for tests. And some kids work like 5 minutes a night, and we have to come up with strategies like making songs, making rhymes, making patterns with the word. So they work really hard at home.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I agree with you. You know, it's very hard for people to recognize just how much effort you put in to make the grades. So you got some help to make reading and spelling easier. So what did it feel like to do therapy for dyslexia?
Therapy for dyslexia was like boring and hard. It was hard because there's a lot of nonsense word, and it was boring because you did like the same thing every day, and it was like taking a test every single day. But in the end, it was worth it because now I read a seventh grade book.
Wow. And you're only in fourth grade.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's really cool. So in addition to being an author, you have also started a scholarship fund to help other kids with dyslexia get some help. So tell us about that.
I started the scholarship fund to help other kids with dyslexia that their parents can't pay for therapy because it's really expensive, and so they don't have to struggle in school and they can get help.
Wow, that's really incredible. And how much money have you raised so far?
Well, I just finished up a raffle for my book, and we raised $1,000.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, Sissy, you wrote in the front of my book, you wrote, "Dream big, never give up." That is an incredible message, and you are a real inspiration, Sissy. So thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you.
If you or your child are dyslexic, though, you also know without a shadow of a doubt that dyslexia comes with heartache and challenges. I want you to know that the challenging part of dyslexia can change. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit, so hang in there with me. But first, I want you to hear from Sissy's mom, Shelley Varela. Sissy has a great outlook on her dyslexia and has had help to resolve it. And of course, that doesn't happen by accident. Shelley knew that there was something getting in the way of her very bright little girl thriving in school. She is here. Welcome, Shelley.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's so great to have you here. You know, Sissy is just delightful. I love her openness and attitude about dyslexia, and I'm sure you played a big part in that. When did you first realize that Sissy might have dyslexia?
Well, I have two older boys, and I taught first grade, and I have a master's degree in education and a reading specialist credential. So helping them through the early ages of school was kind of my my go-to, and they relied on me as their like at-home teacher. And with them, I would work a couple minutes a night, and they would get it, and they would go to school, and they would get their good grades at school. And then when Sissy came along, they're older, they're in high school and junior high, so there's a few years difference. And then when she came along, and I was working the same with her, I quickly realized we were working hours to get to the same grades, the same, you know, the same effort in school. So kindergarten, first grade, it was, you know, oh, she's the smartest in the class. She gets 100% on everything. And I tried to explain to the teachers, you know, that she's working so hard to achieve these grades, like something's just not right. And, you know, second grade came along and same thing. And the same thing, she's the smartest kid in the class. Her grades are great. You know, I don't see anything wrong. So you start to wonder, like, am I overanalyzing it?
Right. Or,
you know, you don't want to be that mom that just wants your kids to be perfect all the time. It had nothing to do with that. I just knew how much work we were putting in at home. I'm a stay-at-home mom with an education background. So I had all the tools at home, especially since I taught first grade. I had the stamps and the numbers and the, you know, I had all the manipulatives to help her at home and a whiteboard. And I knew all the tricks to do. So when they were learning to read, it was fine because she could memorize it. And then we got to third grade and I mentioned to the teacher, this is the year that they no longer are learning to read, they're reading to learn. So I really want you to look at her like first week of school and please tell me what you see, because this is what I see at home. And she said right away, definitely I see a disconnect in some shape or form. So that was kind of like the beginning of it. And then she suggested that we go get some testing. But waiting for the testing to go down, her grades started to slip significantly. Mm-hmm. She was working so hard and getting B's, which a B is not a bad grade. But for the amount of effort and time and energy that she was putting into it, she was starting to get really frustrated. Like, Mom, I'm used to getting A's and 100%. So I'm so thankful, like, that the teacher was on board, because you kind of need the teacher to back you, you know, for you to go get help. So those were like the early signs. Mm-hmm. And then we started things out.
You know, you said some really important things in there that I think parents watching this will relate to. You know, even though at first you didn't know what it was, you spotted that there was something not quite right. But you know, because Sissy is so smart and she worked hard and she got lots of support at home, her difficulties weren't really recognized at first at school. And a lot of times dyslexic learners are so smart and they have such good deductive reasoning and memory. As you said, she was able to memorize quite a bit, that they can test just high enough that they don't qualify to get any help at school.
Yes, because we go to a private school. So you have to have really low grades for them to even send you out to go do the testing. And at the public schools, I think you have to be in the 20, 30th percentile, which that isn't, dyslexias don't fall into that bracket ever because they're so smart. So it's a hard one to diagnose. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful that I had the background that I just kept pushing for it.
Yeah, they're very, very good compensators because they have lots of other skills that they pull into play. So,
yes, and they can do the hard stuff. It's the easy stuff they can't do.
Right, right.
Yeah, like she had amazing comprehension and and a super high IQ, and she could analyze things, and the creative side took over, so it masked all the little stuff. But then, right, you know, you her little teeny words and she couldn't read, you know, it in on the, she would usually just omit it, which doesn't affect the comprehension of the sentence to omit the little words until things get harder. Then it does.
Right.
then on or in kind of matters.
Right. That's right. Yeah. So you got some therapy for her for dyslexia. And I know therapy, of course, for dyslexia or other learning differences is a big investment of time and finances. What was that like for your family as you went through that process?
Well, of course, we would do anything for our kids, as would anybody. But I remember sitting in the meeting with Kathy Johnson, and she told me, you know, she needs 150 hours. You know, she was diagnosed with phonetic phonemic. Luckily for her, she only had one kind. She scored 2% in one area. So for one area, it was 150 hours. And I remember her sitting there telling me that, and she's going over cost. And I remember like the tears kind of going down my face, but not for my own. And then she's explaining to me that 1 in 5 kids have it, and this mm-hmm. is, you know, shouldn't define her. And, you know, she's going through the whole thing with the parent that's sitting there. And I remember just being sad to know that it's that expensive. And fortunately, we were in a position that we could afford it. Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, moved money from here to there and made it happen, because it's definitely a priority. But it was a struggle of time and finances. She did 107 hours between December and the end of summer. It's a short amount of time. She would go to school late. It was a big change for our family. You know, we mm-hmm. had to figure out how the boys are going to get to school and get her to her therapy and arrange with the school when she missed, because she missed an hour of school every morning. And so it was a big struggle, but it was worth it, because I could just picture where she'd be 2-3 years if we didn't do
right.
it. Like,
and, it and how frustrated thing. As such a bright, creative student, and to know that she couldn't keep up. That would be so frustrating.
Yeah. And I felt like it was an investment in her future. Like, we take out college fund accounts, and, you know, my kids happen to be in private school, so we send them to private school. So we invest in all their futures, but she wasn't going to have that easy path like my boys were going to have, unless I invested in this therapy. Like, this was the link that was going to take her on a normal path of school. And, so I would do it over in a heartbeat. And my daughter feels passionate about it too, that, you know, she has friends that are, that, you know, we have friends that I think they're not even going to get tested, or they don't want it because it's a huge financial burden. Mm-hmm. And once you find out, then you have to give them the help. And it's a big expense on everybody. But as a parent that went through it and spent the money, I would do it over and over and over again, because it works. I mean, right. She's night and day.
So tell us how things have changed for her.
She was never the kid that was getting bad grades. Like I said before, she was always the kid who just worked hours on end until she could get the good grade. But A pluses were hard. She didn't get too many A pluses. And they always had a kid in her class that was called, I don't want to say his name on the thing, but there was a little boy in the class. And when the teacher would say, oh, there's one kid who got 100%, everybody would say, oh, it's so-and-so. You know, he was known as the 100% kid. And in fourth grade, when the teacher holds up, you know, the test and said, oh, everybody did great, but we had 100% in the class. Now everyone in the class will chime in and say, oh, I know it's Sissy. Sissy got that 100%. So
wow.
To me, just her self-esteem, like, she's so happy to put in the work. In fact, she will come to me and say, Mom, I have a test next Thursday, and it's Tuesday the week before, like a whole week before. I have the study guide. We have to go over it tonight, because she knows that's how she learns. And she has ownership in her dyslexia. And it's not about being dumb. It's about her brain is different. She needs multiple exposures to different things. We have to do the study guide. We have to do the computer. We have to do the Kahoot. We have to do the Quizlet. We have to make flashcards. We have to sometimes make pictures for the words that she can't recall, because a lot of dyslexics can think of the word compromise, and she'll go, oh, it's that word where like you kind of will do it, and you'll do it just because the other person wants to. And she'll describe it in a million ways, but she cannot recall compromise. So things like that. So we have to draw pictures to remember, you know. So I think what's changed is we used to do all that before. We're not spending quite as much time, but it's a self-esteem thing for her. Mm-hmm. Like, she has total ownership, and this is how I learn, and we own it, and that's the way it is. And I think that's the biggest thing that's changed is, and she's not ashamed, you know, like kids would ask, why are you reading that book? And when they're reading these long chapter books, and she's in the like phonics second grade book, that was hard for her. And now mm-hmm. when she makes mistakes or reverses things, it's like, oh, that dyslexic brain of mine. And, you know, she's not ashamed of it at all. So I think the biggest thing is she just owns it and is nurturing her difference in learning and adapts to it.
That's That's really great. I love the way she talks about it as her superpower, and you, of course, you know, helped her to see it that way. It sounds like you guys really have very open discussions with her about dyslexia, and that can be really, that can be a really difficult conversation for a parent to have. So what advice do you have for parents in regard to talking about dyslexia with their child?
Well, my husband and I, when we got the diagnosis, we sat and talked, how do we confront this, right? Because now she has a label. And we just decided like we were going to celebrate the label. I think so many people are afraid for their child to have the label and have it, stay with their kid. But I think the label is a blessing. And I think she's amazing to have a dyslexic brain. And we did some research on it. And I know with every learning difference, we don't like to call it a learning disability in our house. We just call it her difference. I think with every learning difference, there are great positive things that come with that. So whatever your diagnosis is for your child, research, you know, who has it? Who are some like people? What are some success stories of people that have overcome it? Or what are people doing to make good of it, to celebrate it? So I think that's what we did with her. I researched all the famous people that had it, and I didn't even know that many famous people had it, and people that she knew about. I mean, Albert Einstein. I mean, who doesn't want to be like Albert Einstein?
Right.
Like there's so many great things. And then I think to nurture it. Do whatever they tell you to do, you know, figure it out. Maybe if it's a money issue, do half of what they ask. There's tons of things online. There's books to be read. There's so many tools out there that don't even cost money to help with whatever it is. And then I think adapt to their learning style. Like we know if she's got a test that we have to start a week in advance. So we have to make time to do that. So you just have to adapt to whatever their difference is.
What's so great is she understands that too. So now it's really a partnership between the two of you and not you having to, you know, constantly push it, but that open communication has allowed her to own it and learn about her own learning and her own needs. I think that's amazing.
Yeah. And sometimes our weeks get busy. And we don't get to study that far in advance. And I tell her, this might be the test that we're going to be on. And that's okay. Life goes on and you don't have to get 100% on everything. And in my family, we've always said, like, it's your effort. You know, even with my boys in high school, like, they'll study forever and they get a C on the test. And, you know, I've said, I saw you studying. I saw your effort. The effort doesn't always match the grade. And that's okay, too. So there are weeks that I purposely let her, you know, go out, you know what, go outside and play tonight. You don't need to study. I know the test is in 4 days. And sometimes, you know, she'll get a B on it and I'll explain to her, but we had such a great week and you would have missed out on that birthday party, you know, and that's great too. So I think you have to find the balance and not put the pressure on them that they have to be that 100% kid or they have to do their accommodations every night. There has to be a balance of letting them be a kid too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that the pressure is off. But truthfully, she puts the pressure on herself.
Yeah, they so often do. Well, Shelley, thank you so much for sharing with us. You know that when your child is struggling in school or with homework, it can feel very alone. And so it's always encouraging to hear from another parent that you're not alone, you're not the only one, and that things really can change. So thank you for being willing to be here and for all you and Sissy are doing to spread the word and help other families.
Yeah, I think that we need to change the being afraid of the label. If we all celebrate it, and I think that things could be different with the kids in school, everything. There's just some education on how great it is to be dyslexic.
Right. And that's really the key is education. You know, and it helps them understand their own thinking style and all the cool things about it.
Yep.
So, well, thank you so much Remember, everyone, if you would like a copy of Sissy's book, Doggy Days, or if you would like to contribute to the scholarship that she has set up for other dyslexic students, go to her website, thesissybooks.com. I know many of you viewing are on a similar journey, and I'm just so grateful for Sissy and Shelley being willing to be a little vulnerable and share with us today. Here's my interview with Hudson and Christine Warries. Welcome, Hudson and Christine. I'm so delighted to have you on our show today.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's really great. And Hudson, I know you just got home from school, so yeah. Thank you for coming in here and doing this.
You're welcome.
So, you know, you are a pretty inspiring guy. I hear that you have something in common with a lot of famous people. What is that?
I have dyslexia.
Who is your favorite famous person with dyslexia?
My favorite has to be Tom Holland, the actor who plays Spider-Man in the Marvel movies.
You know what? I thought you were going to say that. Well, one of my favorites is Walt Disney because I kind of grew up with Disneyland. So yeah. I love that creative dyslexic brain that came up with that amazing place. Mm-hmm. So Hudson, what is dyslexia?
Dyslexia is a learning difference, not a disability. It's where the brain is wired to handle information differently than other people.
That is a great way to say it. And, you know, a lot of people think that everybody with dyslexia can't read. Would you say that's true?
It's not true. People with dyslexia just take more time to read.
Okay. And, you know, sometimes I've found that students with dyslexia, they actually kind of fool everybody into thinking they can read really easily, but their brains are working really hard at it.
Yeah.
So before you learned about your dyslexia, before you came to the Learning Center, how did you feel about school and reading?
Well, before about school, I just saw everyone else turning in papers before I could. And I thought I was dumb that I couldn't get stuff. And I never liked reading by myself. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really is hard when you're trying hard and then everybody else turns things in faster or, you know, is loving reading books and you don't really like to. So you learned that you had dyslexia. How did that help you?
I think that learning about dyslexia just helped me understand what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm. And so did that kind of help you feel a little bit different about school, about yourself?
Yeah, because I felt more courageous about school and confident. And I knew what was going on.
Yeah. And that's huge. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people who have dyslexia have a really creative thinking style or talents. So what are some of your creative thinking powers?
I love building and designing things, especially Legos. I love puzzles and things with math patterns. I have a great memory, too.
That's fantastic. You know, in our centers, we have Lego tables in the waiting room because so many of our students, as you said, love building things with Legos and can build these incredible creative things. So when you learned, Hudson, that you had dyslexia and I think you and your mom just really started, you know, studying about it and learning about it. And I think you got so inspired or empowered that you wanted to share with other people about it. So tell me about, you know, creating your PowerPoint and who you shared it with.
Well, at first, I didn't share it with my class, so it was just kind of like a secret. But we were reading a book in class where this kid couldn't read. And a student came up after lunch and said to the teacher, "Does he have dyslexia?" And I overheard that, and I wanted to share it with my class.
Wow, that is very cool. And how did the class respond?
I think they were just shocked.
I am sure that you have helped other kids and maybe even your teacher a little bit to understand kids who are smart but struggling with some things. That's fantastic. So, Hudson, you've been working with Caitlin and Eloy at Stowell Learning Center in Irvine. What is easier for you now than when you first started?
I love reading on my own now, and writing has become a lot easier.
Wow, I love hearing that. Do you have any favorite books? Is there a favorite story that you have?
No, I have lots of favorite books, though.
That is fantastic. This summer, you even got to come out and do a few sessions in person at the Learning Center. How was that?
That was good and better, so I could actually like do some stuff like the exercises in instead of just in my basement.
Yeah. Well, you guys have done great doing it remotely, but we always love it when we get to get face to face with students. So I know they all had a good time meeting you. Mm-hmm. And I have to ask, what fun things did you do while you were out here in California?
I know we did go to the Aquarium of the Pacific.
Nice. So, Hudson, what would you want to say to other kids or even adults with dyslexia?
It's not that you can't read or write. It's just you do it differently.
Having embraced your dyslexia and learning about it, I feel like, it really helped you to feel better about yourself, to recognize that you're not lazy or, you're just as smart or smarter than your classmates. It's just that you think about it a little bit differently. And having worked at the Learning Center, some things changed for you. So things are getting easier, right?
Yeah.
Well, Hudson, thank you so much for sharing with us. Christine, I can see why you're so proud of Hudson. Give us your perspective on your journey with Hudson's learning and experience at the Learning Center.
Yes, we are just impressed with everything that has happened it's been less than a year that Hudson has been a part of Stowell. And to see that we were tested at the end of October or evaluated, and then to begin his Zoom sessions with his clinician the beginning of November, and to see that he had already progressed and changed within less than a month. He went from being a very reluctant reader out loud. He would not read aloud at all, even when asked by us at home. And I know that at school, it really bothered him if he was called upon, because he knew that he was not able to read well. And within less than a month's time, he was reading fluently out loud. He was reading with expression in his voice. He was pausing at the punctuation marks, which he had never done before. He would string the sentences together when he would read aloud from a book or a passage. And we saw that was our first glimpse at the change that was occurring. And we couldn't get over that in itself. That was such a huge change in such a short amount of time. And then from there on out, it was little things such as his handwriting was improving and his cursive was becoming so legible and really turned beautiful. And he just, one of the first even before reading, his fluency out reading aloud began to increase and become better. That first week after he was tested and we received his diagnosis, he went back to school and his teacher said right away that he seemed so relaxed and mm-hmm. confident with himself. And that alone was a gift that we knew he needed to be able to have going forward, that he was able to then look at school as something that he wasn't fighting against, but that something that he could work through. And he knew what was in front of him. He knew that he has dyslexia and dysgraphia, and that it wasn't that he was dumb, because mm-hmm. he felt that way. And we didn't even realize he was feeling as frustrated as what he was. And so with that, with his teacher seeing that already, it was incredible for us to know that this is going to only get better from here on out. And then through the spring, he was able to take his iLearn tests that were for the state that we're in, and he received scores. We just received them in the last week, that he is the first time ever in his school career that he is at the higher part of his grade level or above, reaching the above part. And so that blows our minds that he is doing that well. And it was for not only math, which we know that he has tested strongly in before, but it was also for ELA, which has been a struggle for him in the past. So that has been a wonderful, just incredible process in itself, just to see the change within just a few months' time to now going on to almost a year anniversary of being with Stoll.
Wow, that is so wonderful to hear. Congratulations, Hudson. It sounds Thanks. Like you're doing great. You know, doing this, it's not a small commitment. I mean, it takes a lot of time. And I think it's even more challenging since you went through 2020, where you were probably doing online schooling and then doing this online too. But Hudson, let me ask you, do you feel like this has been worth the time that you've spent on it? Because it's Yes. like a little extra bit of homework, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about like changes for you going, you're in fifth grade this year, right?
No, I'm in sixth.
Oh, you're in sixth. Oh my gosh. You're in sixth grade. And so thinking about the changes that have happened for you and all the work that you've done, how are you feeling about sixth grade now? Because that's a pretty challenging grade.
I'm feeling very confident.
Fantastic. Christine, you also have the perspective of being a teacher.
Yes.
How are you feeling about this school year for Hudson?
I'm feeling extremely, I think, at ease as both a mom and a teacher, because this is the first year that we have entered a school year knowing. Last year we found out at the end of October. So that kind of explained what was happening to him from middle of August until that point. But this is the first time we've been able to begin a brand new school year. And he began middle school this year also. So he is switching classes and mm-hmm. he's going from two teachers that he had in fifth grade to about seven. And so for that in itself, it can be overwhelming for any student. But for a student with dyslexia, we were just concerned as far as how is this going to be. We know that he has dyslexia and we know that he's equipping himself with all the tools that his clinicians are helping him with, and he has all that ready to go. But how is this going to really work? And he has done so well, and it has been wonderful for us to know what he has been fighting against so many years for all of his schooling up until fifth grade with us not knowing. It has been a blessing to know and then to enter his middle school year with just that confidence that we are being well taken care of with everyone at school and the accommodations that they're able to have for him there, but also just the incredible support that we've received from Stoll and all of the clinicians that he has had in the last year, which each and every one of them has meant so much to our family in different ways and have blessed us with all that they have given for Hudson, for his learning and for processing through this time, but also going forward. We know that they're always rooting for him, and that that is an incredible thing.
Yeah. And I know they have thoroughly enjoyed working with your family and with you, Hudson, and are just cheering for you with all the things that you're doing. So thinking about how bright Hudson is and how well our kids can sometimes cover their struggles at school, I mean, because Hudson went a pretty long time managing, even though there was something. Are there things that you would want other teachers or parents to be aware of or to look out for, or any advice for them?
Yes. I think approaching it as a mom that was a former classroom teacher. I taught 6 years in fifth grade before we had our family. I think that it was almost unnerving that I couldn't figure out what was going on with Hudson and his learning. And he was coping. His coping skills were so high, mm-hmm. as his evaluator, Sarah, had told us, that he was just doing everything he could to stay at the grade level and not dip too far below. And with that, he was fooling his teachers also, where they were not quite knowing that he was having as many problems as he really was having. So with that, looking back, there were some signs that I don't know if I could have pinpointed them right away, just because, you know, you're thinking if this is a new learner in first grade and this is where, you know, this is a school's new to them. But with each grade, school became harder and harder for him. And now realizing that school and learning should not be as hard as it is and it was for him, that should be a big sign for parents and for teachers too. If there's a student in the classroom that really is spending so much time to try to get homework done, or within the classroom, if they're taking all of the class period, the allotted time to complete that one worksheet and still not finishing it, that would be a red flag also. I think that as a parent, now that I have seen how, you know, it progressed, he would come home from school so exhausted, just beyond tired, not wanting to do any other homework or studying for a test or a quiz. He was done. And I know now that that is a sign of just mental exhaustion that dyslexics have, because they are working four times harder. I read in a book, four times harder than a normal student, just to stay at the very minimum of what they can. So that would be another thing. And I think that being easily distracted could be another sign. Hudson would sometimes just be flitting from one thing to the other when we were trying to work on homework after school, and he wasn't focused on what we were doing, in that I just thought he was just done with school and tired from the day. But to see that now, I'm thinking, okay, that could have been a sign that I could have picked up on. I wouldn't say it's as much as the reading, because he was a reluctant reader and he didn't want to read out loud very much. So that could have been a sign. But as a whole, it's not that they can't read. So when people have said to me, oh, did you know he was dyslexic because he couldn't read? And so we try to debunk that myth as much as we can, because we know now that that is not the case. They can read. It just takes them a longer time to do so. So I think back to the classes that I taught and the students I had sitting in the desks in front of me, and I think how many of those students quite possibly could have been dyslexic and I didn't know it as a teacher, because we're just not equipped or trained to know or to spot certain things with dyslexia. So it is something that if a parent or a teacher just think that they find that something just doesn't line up, I would go with your gut. And that is what ended up happening with us with Hudson, that every year we would ask for at the parent teacher conferences for advice on what to do, because we knew something wasn't lining up. We just couldn't figure out what it was, because he was proving to us that he was able to make the grades and to do his very best. It was just taking so much work and it was exhausting for him.
Well, everything that you just said there, that is a really good picture of what parents see. I mean, we know our kids want to learn, they want to do well. And so you see these signs of exhaustion or not wanting to read out loud, or, you know, getting easily distracted because they are tired and overwhelmed at the end of the school day. Well, thank you both so much for being here. Hudson, I have to ask you, so listening to what your mom was saying about how things were, when you're doing homework now, how do you feel about homework? Have you had very much so far this year?
I haven't really had that much homework because it's just the beginning of the year, but I think that I'll do better because I know what's going on and I have more tools.
Well, I think that you will too. And I think you're going to have a great year. Thank you both so much for sharing. You are super inspiring. And I know this is going to help a lot of parents and kids.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's so easy for our struggling students to think of themselves as dumb or lazy. So that unconditional support and honest conversation about the challenges, whether it's dyslexia or other learning differences, helps students to understand and appreciate themselves more. Parents and teachers can support children with dyslexia by helping them become aware of the strengths that they have just from the way they think and process information. But be careful not to assume that their dyslexic challenges can't be changed. Let's talk about what has to be done to permanently correct challenges associated with dyslexia. First, more reading or decoding practice will not do the trick. When students are not able to recognize letters or make sense out of the phonetic code of the language, there's a reason for that. If words seem to kind of swim around on the page, there's a reason for that. The reason may have to do with neurotiming or auditory or visual processing. It may be related to where reading is being processed in the brain, or a lack of integration between the auditory and visual and comprehension systems. There are many underlying processing or learning skills that have to be in place in order to learn as effectively as possible. The solution is to identify and develop those weak underlying skills so that the brain is getting the information that it needs to learn reading, spelling, and other academic skills. The brain is a learning machine. It doesn't have to remain stuck in inefficient patterns. Most people continue to say that dyslexia can't change, but the brain research and our work at Stowell Learning Centers and the work of colleagues over the last 40 years proves that this simply isn't true. If you have a dyslexic child, support and celebrate and nurture the talents and get him or her the help to address the underlying root of the problem so that then the academic skills can more easily be remediated. Hey, summer is coming up, and if you're worried about the next school year, I encourage you to take advantage of the summer to work intensively to start closing the gap. There are not that many places in the country where you can get services as comprehensive as ours, but we are a part of a network of centers around the country who do this kind of work. So if you contact us, we'll let you know if there's someone we're aware of in your area who is doing this work. I remember a little girl who came to us when she was just Sissy's age. She had just finished third grade. She had been diagnosed with ADHD, but actually was dyslexic. She came for a six-week intensive at the Learning Center during the summer. She worked one-to-one, 3 hours a day. I know, it seems like a lot, but there's nothing like seeing rapid changes and feeling successful. Raquel went from reading at a first grade level to a fifth grade level that summer and went on to do extremely well in school, graduating at the top of her high school class and going on to complete a degree in geological engineering. This didn't happen by accident or because she grew out of it. It happened because the underlying skills she needed to process the sounds and words and the print on the page were systematically and intentionally developed. Obviously, not every student is going to completely resolve their dyslexia or learning challenges in one summer, but short-term intensive work can make a huge difference, especially now when so many students have lost so much learning this year. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers, and we have been talking about dyslexia. Stowell Learning Centers are open for remote sessions and screenings, so you can access our services wherever you are in the world. We're also seeing students on site at our four Southern California centers with all of the COVID precautions. We work with children and adults doing targeted brain training to permanently change dyslexia and other learning and attention challenges so that students can reach their potential and thrive in school. As you begin planning for summer, remember that summer intensive programs are very effective as a way to make up for lost instruction and close up the academic gaps and give your kids a boost before the next school year. If you would like a free consultation for yourself or your child, give us a call or visit our website at stowellcenter.com.